This is Long Story Short from the Connecticut Mirror and WSHU Public Radio. I'm Ebon Udama. Dual credit courses offer Connecticut high school students an opportunity to gain college credits, but they're not always available.
So when you are having this high turnover of teachers leaving districts, or you have teachers who don't have the capacity to go to UConn and get these other certifications, that's where you start to see these gaps in accessibility.
That's Jessica Harkey, the Connecticut Mirror's education reporter. She's done a deep dive into what determines whether a Connecticut high school offers dual credit courses to its students. More to come after this.
From Greenwich to Groton, Massapequa to Montauk, and everywhere in between, the WSHU podcast After All Things has got you covered with news and culture from Connecticut and Long Island in less than 15 minutes. Hosted by me, Sabrina Garone. So from Fire Island to Fairfield and West Hampton to Westport, listen to After All Things weeknights wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, Jessica. Advanced placement courses have a high school student pass a standardized test at the end of the year to determine whether they qualify for college. But a dual enrollment program allows a student to gain college credits by taking a college class and being graded throughout the year. Now, educators say it gives students true mastery. How so, and why is that an advantage for first-generation and low-income students?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference compared to like an AP course is you're taking a big test at the end of the year and you're having all of what you learned that whole year in one test, and that's whether you get that college credit or not. So when they say that's a true mastery of content, it's just because you're going through a normal course. You're taking tests throughout the year. You're doing quizzes. You're writing essays, which is more natural to what's actually happening in a college setting. Usually we have finals in college, but that's not what all of your grade and whether you get credit is going to depend on. And so that ties into those low-income or first-generation students, that they're getting exposed to a college setting early rather than having to depend on a test, and that's whether you get that college credit or not.
So why isn't it readily available at all high schools in Connecticut?
Yeah, UConn does a great job of trying to bring these to schools across Connecticut. The governor last year, the year before, issued a grant where schools could apply to expand these programs. But the biggest problem is these programs depend on your teachers. A teacher has to be certified with UConn specifically to be able to teach these. So they're basically like associate professors at that point. So when you are having this high turnover of teachers leaving districts, or you have teachers who don't have the capacity to go to UConn and get these other certifications, that's where you start to see these gaps in accessibility. That in some schools, if you have teachers who are there for decades and they have a normal workload and they have the time to expand their own mastery to be able to teach a higher level course, they're going to be able to do that. And that was something Kate Diaz talked about in my story, is they love to educate. They want to give their students as many resources as they can. But where we start to see that disconnect is whether a teacher has the capacity and the time to offer these classes and to, I guess, level up their own mastery, or if they have a high turnover.
The turnover, why is it different from district to district?
Yeah, it really depends on either just the leadership in the district with their superintendents. If you have superintendent turnover pretty frequent, which is setting the direction a district is going in, it could be pay. It could be a wide variety of just the different conditions a district is under. Hartford is very different than West Hartford, and that's something that I think most people are pretty aware of, that they're all facing different challenges. And so that's how it's different among districts. But then you also see this in districts and the leadership in these buildings, that maybe one principal says, you know what, I think AP classes are the way to go. Let's keep offering those. How can we get more people teaching those? And some other leadership may say, you know what, I like dual credit classes. Let's expand that. Or someone might also say, We have teachers that are leaving every year. We just need to focus on getting our core classes done. So you see it on the district level based on those district challenges and funding and what they're facing locally, but you also see it within individual school buildings.
So not all ECE certified teachers are put to use in school districts.
Yeah, that's the other part of it is even if a teacher says, you know what, I'm going to go get certified, I want to teach these courses. Again, when you're seeing more of these high turnover districts, that's where you're seeing like, you know what, we just need to focus on having our core classes done. We're losing teachers left and right, maybe an English teacher left mid-semester and you need someone to cover that course. That's the other part of that is even if a teacher is certified, sometimes the needs are in other places, so they may not necessarily have the time or the staff capacity to offer these kind of extracurricular core courses.
So is there anything that's being done to try and equalize this?
Yeah, I think you're seeing these grants. That's the first thing, that they're offering more incentive to districts to offer these courses. That was something that Lamont issued, I think, back in 2023, if I'm not mistaken. You're seeing that. You're seeing that UConn is going to these individual schools and saying, hey, how can we help you? That was something with a lot of the dialogues. They said they're very receptive. They have like ambassadors at different schools and different districts that are able to offer those resources. So I think we're seeing a little bit of that, but a lot of it just really does boil down to stability and also having like the correct funding in place that, okay, we can pay teachers to stay here. We can create good work environments that they want to stay here, but how do we now level up to that next level of course offerings?
And one of the most important things about this is that it reduces the cost of college for low-income and first-generation students. Could you just tell us how that happens?
Definitely. So what they do at Title I schools is all of the cost for these courses is waived. So if you're going to a district that has a high threshold of low-income students, just from the bat, it's eliminated, that extra cost barrier. But in other districts, it's $50 a credit, which is pennies to the dollar when you think about it, when people are paying, I think it was like over $700 per credit at UConn when they attend that school. So to be able to take that a little early for $50 or less per credit just really helps save money. I took these courses when I was in high school and I ended up graduating with an associate's degree and that transferred to my university and I saved 2 years of college, which I think at the time was like $60,000 a year. So it definitely adds up.
And what determines whether you get it? Just the happenstance of which school district you're in?
Yeah, it's not even what district you're in. It could even be just what school building are you assigned to based on what part of the city you live in. Something I looked into in this story was in Waterbury, one school may offer 3 courses, but the other school a few blocks away offers 12 courses. So yeah, it definitely depends on the district. Obviously, there are higher averages in suburban districts that have more of that stability aspect, but it also just depends within school buildings and that school leadership too.
And Jessica, is there anywhere parents can get involved in this and try and find out which schools are offering these courses?
Yeah, one thing that's interesting is it kind of begins early in the process. When I was first exposed to these courses, I was in middle school. And so that's something based on conversations with these school leaders and these district leaders, they're trying to get into these students' houses as soon as possible. So that's starting these conversations in middle school, having these course offerings available to these children when they're in eighth grade, ninth grade, before they even come to that high school setting, and being aware of just what all those offerings and opportunities are and whether that's the best fit. If a dual credit class isn't the best fit, maybe an AP class is the best fit. If that's not the best fit, maybe it's honors. Oh, maybe I don't want to be in dual credit calculus, but I can be in dual credit EMT training. So there's those different resources. And I think those conversations are happening earlier. And that's the best way to get to parents and their families, students and their families earlier, is just having those dialogues, sending things back home, having these places where parents could come into the schools and ask questions and that kind of thing.
Well, thank you so much, Jessica.
Definitely. Thanks so much.
Long Story Short is hosted by me, Ebong Udama, and produced by Molly Ingram. Harriet Jones is our editor, WSHU's Alicia Daddario, and the Connecticut Mirror's Gabby DeBenedictis are our digital team. This podcast is a collaboration between the Connecticut Mirror and WSHU Public Radio. We go behind the scenes at the home of public policy journalism in Connecticut. More can be found online at ctmirror.org and wshu.org. Our episodes can be found wherever you get your podcasts.